This is the Voice of America's worldwide coverage of the flight of Apollo 15, man's fourth visit to the lunar surface. The lunar lander Falcon, with astronauts Scott and Irwin, is resting in the Apennine-Hadley real area of the moon. Touchdown came 14 hours 44 minutes ago at 22 hours 16 GMT. Following a good night's sleep, the astronauts are now preparing for the first extensive EVA of the mission, with Commander Scott scheduled to step from the LEM to the surface about 38 to 40 minutes from now. For a running account of early EVA preparations, we take you to the Manned Spacecraft Center at Houston and VOA space correspondent Rhett Turner.
Well, the astronauts are donning their pressure suits and at this moment are in the process of hooking up those life-giving and life-saving backpacks, the oxygen supply system which sustains life on the moon as they go outside their protected lunar module and begin their first geological excursion of the moon. They were awakened 1 hour early this morning in order to check out what is called a slight leak in the descent oxygen tank. And it was discovered that this was caused by a urine transfer device. A valve had been left in an open position when this was closed. This took care of this small leak. It was a very minor problem. They were awakened from their sleep 1 hour early to take care of this, and now they're in the process, pretty close to the timeline. It looks like they may be running just a few minutes behind the timeline in preparing for this first excursion outside the lunar module with that lunar rover to go down to Hadley Rill and to the Apennine Front. We'll be back in a few minutes with details.
This is the Voice of America's live coverage of the flight of Apollo 15, 119 hours into the mission. We'll continue this coverage for the first EVA following this summary of other news.
The search for participants in the unsuccessful coup in Sudan continues. United Press International reports that diplomatic pouches are being checked and that Soviet and Eastern European newsmen are being restricted. The Soviet news agency TASS reports that Soviet leaders sent personal appeals to Sudanese President Jafar Numeiri, trying to stop what TASS calls a reign of terror in Sudan, directed against Sudanese communists. TASS reports that Soviet leaders, noting Sudanese violence against Soviet officials and damage to Soviet property, said the actions raised the question of maintaining friendly relations. The Sudanese news agency reports that Sudan protested to the Soviet ambassador in Khartoum about what it termed a biased and unfair Soviet campaign aimed at harming the Sudanese. Japanese authorities found the last of the 162 bodies of the people killed in what was apparently the worst civil air disaster in history. They died when an all-Nippon Airways Boeing 727 airliner and a jet fighter on a training mission collided and then crashed yesterday over northern Japan. All aboard the domestic airliner, on a flight from Sapporo to Tokyo, were Japanese citizens, except for the flight engineer, an American. The body of a Japanese newsman missing for more than 1 year in Cambodia was found near Phnom Penh. He was identified as Teruo Takajima of the Japanese International and Press Research Institute. The Institute's director said Mr. Takajima was executed by Cambodian communists. South Vietnamese President Thieu said he would go to Hanoi and suggest membership of both Vietnams in the United Nations if it would help to end the Indochina War. During a speech at a Saigon sports stadium, he again called for a ceasefire and negotiations. However, he repeated his previous strong anti-communist position. President Nixon leaves Ohio today for Iowa to dedicate a flood control dam. Last night, the president spoke to several thousand people in Canton, Ohio, at a banquet ceremony honoring seven new members admitted to the Professional Football Hall of Fame. The president called on Americans to channel the spirit of the athletic field into peaceful competition with other nations of the world. American and Soviet negotiators will meet again next Tuesday in Helsinki to discuss limiting strategic arms. Their meeting Friday lasted nearly 3 hours and was described as cordial. The two sides have agreed to discuss defensive missile systems this year. The Berlin problem was discussed again by the representatives of the United States, Britain, France, and the Soviet Union. The conferees expressed satisfaction after nearly 4 hours of talks in West Berlin. The four power representatives said nothing about the recent publication of alleged secret documents on the talks by the Munich magazine Quick. The five-nation Arab summit conference in Tripoli, Libya, strongly condemned what it called Jordanian efforts to try to liquidate the Palestinian resistance movement. A Japanese passenger ship with more than 500 people aboard and a Japanese freighter reportedly collided in the Philippine Sea. Five of the six freighter crewmen are said to be missing and presumed drowned. However, there are no reports of any injured or missing from the passenger ship. That's the news. Leo Scully reporting.
This is the Voice of America's live coverage of the flight of Apollo 15. Now to the Manned Spacecraft Center and VOA correspondent Rhett Turner.
With us this morning in Houston, as a matter of fact, with us to bring you a description of this first extravehicular activity is astronaut Fred Hayes, who was the lunar module pilot on Apollo 13. Good morning, Fred. Dragging a microphone and welcome to the world here this morning.
Morning, Rhett. Glad to be here.
Seems like everything's going good on Apollo 15. We're just listening to Scott and Irwin as they're donning the portable life support systems, the PLISs. And I think he has the. Sounds like both of them have their hoods on. He mentioned the lever there a moment ago.
Yes.
So it looks like we're going to be pretty close to the timeline, and I'll reserve that final opinion until we listen for a moment to Scott and Irwin up there in the lunar module. They're going through the long procedure, preparing to go outside the lunar module Falcon for their very first extravehicular excursion, the geological excursion of the moon there in the Hadley landing site. Let's tune in here and listen to what Scott and Irwin are saying there on the moon.
Air pressure's coming up. Okay, here, press flag.
Pressurizing the suit, sounds like.
Yes, they're one step away from getting ready to dump the cabin, the vacuum. Pressure integrity check they're running, and the next thing is cabin depress.
So they're right on the timeline, it appears to us here. As we mentioned at the beginning of this hour, when we first reported from here at Houston, they were awakened an hour early, so they lost an hour of sleep here last night, in order to check an oxygen tank problem. And it turned out that this oxygen tank problem was caused by a small cap, which is applied to a urine transfer device. Fred, help us explain this. This is just a cap over the tube through which this bodily waste is dumped overboard, isn't it?
Well, the conical device you actually use is, can be removed from the line that feeds to a reservoir. It actually doesn't go overboard. It goes into a tank. Mm-hmm. In the descent stage of the limb, and is stowed there, and apparently
it's disposed of.
Yes,
way we can say.
The plug in the conical end that you use was leaking gas mm-hmm. overboard
mm-hmm.
and into this tank, and so they apparently removed the conical device from a quick disconnect couple, and replaced it with a cap, much like you'd do to a piece of plumbing in the house that you mm-hmm.
just capped up the pipe.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, if there was somewhat of a leak overboard, they're drawing their oxygen supply from the descent tanks at the moment?
That's right, yes.
This was used.
Fortunately, that's the ones you can afford to give up some oxygen out of.
Because that descent stage stays there on the surface after you leave.
Yes, and there are the very large tanks, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go back with Scott and Irwin there. From the moon, very clear conversation.
You can really tell the pump's running, can't you?
Mm-hmm.
Scott says you can really tell the pump's running.
Yeah.
He's speaking of the glycol pump in the backpack. You just turned it on, and it makes a noticeable whirring noise, and you can also feel the flow through the suit, the liquid flow.
This is the liquid-cooled suit. This is something which we didn't have in Gemini. You may remember.
About a minute, Dave, right there. I'm reading 3-7. Yeah, they'll give us a mark.
You may remember in the Gemini flights, the several of the astronauts, particularly Gene Cernan, got very hot, and so did Dick Gordon while outside working on those Agena rockets in the backside of the Gemini craft. Well, in the Apollo spacesuits, we have what's called a liquid-cooled garment, and an antifreeze glycol solution is pumped through small tubing in this garment to help keep the body cool so that you don't sweat, so that you don't perspire inside one of these spacesuits. That's made a great difference in comfort, hasn't it, Fred?
Well, it's very essential for all the work you do on lunar surface and walking around and physical effort.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, repress. Open. TV 16, COM TV closed. COM TV closed. Hey, Kevin, repress valve to close.
Okay, he's set up now, so they'll get the TV.
Okay, and you can come around to the dump valve.
So they're now opening the dump valve.
That means that the cabin is ready to be depressed, I presume.
That's right. It's starting down now.
Yeah. See if I can get out of your way a little bit.
Oh, is that what's blocking me?
Yeah, move back in the corner. Okay. Let me get turned around here a little bit.
He's actually now about 5 minutes early, isn't he?
Yes.
On this depress.
You notice Dave saying to get back in the corner.
Yeah,
they're both fairly big guys in that limb, and with the backpacks on both of them at the same time, it's quite crowded.
We might make the comment at this point that Dave is one of the biggest guys in the program. He's quite a big, strapping, even six-footer.
Okay, we're doing a 4.5. 4. Mark 3.5. Back to auto.
You know, there was a bit of concern, Fred, among all of us in the electronic media particularly, as to whether Dave and Jim might hold right to the timeline on this EVA. All of us have set up our broadcast worldwide to conform to the highlights of the mission, the most interesting parts, and if he went out early, we'd all be scrambling for rescheduling our transmissions. But he's right on it here.
Something about the clock here.
I bet they didn't.
Overhead or forward dump valve to open. Okay, I'm going over. Can you verify tone on, water flag A, at about 1.2 to 1.7?
That's a monumental checklist,
okay,
isn't it?
Yes. Check and see condensation in here.
Condensation somewhere.
Yeah, little fog.
As the cabin goes down the vacuum, they can see virtually the condensation they had made, or moisture they had put in the cabin from breathing, is now vaporizing as the cabin goes down the vacuum, so they have a slight bit of fog
inside the cabin.
Inside the cabin.
That will quickly dissipate.
Yes, yeah, it'll sublimate
into the vacuum.
Immediately, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, if you can slide back over to the right a tad there.
Okay, Fred, let's describe some of the things they are doing there. We're listening to the astronauts and this long checklist. It's pretty technical. Let's see if we can translate some of what they're doing.
Well, basically, they have their backpacks, the oxygen supply turned on there, and it's, of course, keeping their suit pumped up. And they're in the process of dumping the limb down the vacuum, which you have to do to even open the door to get out. They hesitate halfway down toward vacuum to once again verify that the suit is holding pressure and it's going to be all right.
Mm-hmm.
Then they dump it all the way to zero, or the vacuum, and open a hatch. And then they still have to sit there for another minute because you have to be down to a very low pressure to turn on the water to the sublimator, which is the cooling device in the backpack, because it only operates down very close to vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
So then you have to wait for this, what he was saying, the H2O, or the water flag. It's a little indicator on the control package for the backpack to clear, which indicates to you that the sublimator is indeed working.
Mm-hmm.
It's formed its ice cake, and it's starting to sublimate and give you cooling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Also obvious to you because you can feel it.
These are miraculous units.
I can't keep it open because of the pressure.
One man helps the other.
They're flat, aren't they, Jim? The trajectories.
Hold it open, Jim. Hold it open there. Very flat, Joe.
Our capsule communicator this morning is Joe Allen in Mission Control. He is also the mission scientist for this mission and an astronaut. And he has gone through this complete training period with Scott and Irwin, so we have a man there in Mission Control as qualified as the fellows in space, as is Fred Hayes here, who trained also for lunar landing number 13, Apollo 13. Let's see what's happening here now. They're getting close.
Can't keep it open.
Dave's having trouble keeping the hatch open.
Okay.
That's Scott.
Their backpacks, of course, are emitting, and their suits as well, a little bit of oxygen. And the way that hatch opens, just a little bit of residue it's pumping out makes it difficult to bleed the cabin all the way down, and just a little bit of pressure left in the cabin makes that hatch tend to stay shut.
We can hear him going.
Yeah, he's having to work. The door limb is actually flimsy, and you can bend it. And what he's probably doing is bending the side where he has a hold of the handle, while the hinge side, the other side, is still flat.
So you can let it bleed out.
Let it bleed out around the corner.
Oh, it's my back.
Let's listen to this. That's Irwin. He says, okay, I can't tell.
Okay.
Scott, okay.
That's primary water open.
Primary water open.
They do that? No.
So Jim is going to open Dave's water valve on his backpack. You work together on that. It's a lot easier.
Yeah, I'm going to have to move it. You look around it. Let me turn around here. Yeah. See what might be.
They're both talking to each other. It's a little hard to understand exactly what they're referring to there. It sounded like Jim had a little trouble trying to turn around there. Again, it's cramped inside the cabin.
And the way the valves are located on the backpack, you have to turn a certain way for the other guy to be able to reach it.
Mm-hmm. We haven't received confirmation they've gotten the hatch open yet, though.
They have, or he wouldn't be turning on the water. I don't think they have.
Okay.
Yes.
Around now, let me check you.
Irwin says, okay, I'm swinging around now so Dave can reach his backpack.
Anything, honey? Oh, this thing. Here.
A lot of puffing here.
Oh, I think the hoses were.
There's something about a hose there.
Okay, your right side. Let's hop on these hoses.
They're more concerned about just communicating with each other than with us at this point. Also, it's apparently exerting a good bit of energy there in twisting and squirming around inside these very hard, pressurized suits. That's the challenge at this point, inside a constricted area cabin and a hard suit.
Yeah, although it's Dave primarily, I think we hear puffing, and he may have exerted quite a bit of energy getting the hatch open.
Mm-hmm. We're looking good on the timeline, I believe, so far. They're still about 5 minutes ahead of time on depressurization. Somebody said, get it all right? We believe that's Dave Scott breathing rather heavily there. This is remarkable, is the amount of work that's involved just in getting the inside, the interior of the lunar module checked out and the hatch open. Sounds like it might be easier once they're out.
It's kind of like pre-flight in an airplane, the same way.
Uh-huh.
Once you get airborne, things are easier with an airplane, too.
Uh-huh. Dave Scott and Jim Irwin on the surface of the moon, opening the hatch to the lunar module Falcon, preparing to go outside.
Check
Yep. They have a jettison bag that should go out when Dave goes out, and apparently I heard him mention that they did not have it tied up, so I think right now they're involved with getting it secured, the top of it, so they can niftily hand it out without everything spilling out of it.
Mm-hmm. The Voice of America is bringing you this transmission worldwide, the first extravehicular excursion of the moon by David Scott and Jim Irwin. From Apollo 15. This is Rhett Turner in Houston with astronaut Fred Hayes describing this communication as it's coming in live from the surface of the moon. Let's see. Let me flip the...
I can start.
Just about... No, not quite time to flip the page of the flight plan here. They're ticking off the events here. This first extravehicular activity is to last 7 hours from the time of cabin depressurization. About let's see. How many hours ago? 7 minutes ago? Something like that.
Okay, my water flag's clear.
Okay.
Dave said something's clear there.
His water flag. His sublimator is working and he's feeling cooling.
Mm-hmm. You depend upon this icing and sublimation to cool that glycol liquid in the back.
That's circulated, yes, through the garment you're wearing.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of an odd feeling. It cools all your body, but your does not cool your head. You still have gaseous cooling for your head and face.
The oxygen flow.
Yes, so if you work real hard, you can work very hard, in fact, and still be even chilly in your body, but have a flushed, hot face.
That's amazing. Yes, you can't exactly wrap a cooling garment around your face without considerable discomfort.
Yeah, just went. I just looked at it. Let's take the right pair of eyes.
That's got something about... Irwin said he just looked at something there, and Scott said, must take a right pair of eyes to see it. A little difficulty in seeing something there. From inside, again, now the helmets are on, and there is... I would presume the lighting is a bit difficult, too. Be somewhat dim inside the helmet, which has protective coloring on it and shielding on it to protect the astronauts from the sun.
And they have the light secured in the limb now. They were just waiting for the water flags to clear.
Meaning that the sublimator, that the water cooling device, was fully checked out, working as properly. As ordered. Sounds like Dave's getting down there on the
in
the door.
By the way, you got TV picture down there?
Not yet, Dave. We're working on it.
Scott asked Houston if they had a TV picture down there yet. We don't.
Again?
I think that's on the mesa, isn't it?
Yes. Well, what he meant is, are they getting the downlink signal, which they're he's punched in the circuit breaker, so they should be getting downlink. The picture, of course, will be dark because the camera is still tucked away in the folded-up mesa.
This is a modular equipment stowage assembly on the outside of the limb. When Dave climbs down the ladder and opens up this equipment assembly...
Is the mesa deployed?
Joe Allen's asking if the mesa is deployed already.
Something to do with it, huh, Joe?
Not yet. Scott says that might have something to do with it. Not yet.
Okay.
But as Fred's pointed out, they have the electronics turned on for the TV camera.
Can you move back a tad?
Yeah. Dave's apparently climbing out the hatch.
Yeah. There we go.
There we go, he says.
Which, again, because of Dave's size,
Dave,
probably takes a little more dexterity than, say, for Pete
high.
Conrad to work his way through the hatch.
To see water coming from his sublimator, over.
Joe Allen asking him to take one more look. Ground sees some...
Let's check it out when we get out, Joe.
One more check on the sublimator there. Joe Allen's asking for. The people watching the parameters on the... life support system are asking for one more check. The people on Earth watching.
Okay, down a little further, Dave. Yes, the back of the place, just hitting the disky desk. Yeah, I was caught on the jettison bag.
What was that, Fred?
They're telling, Jim is telling Dave to squinch down a little lower. His backpack is hitting Okay, mm-hmm. He first of all was...
Your left. Okay, how's that? Good.
Was hitting the desk below the disky, which is the way
the
to talk
keyboard.
To the primary guidance computer.
Mm-hmm, the display keyboard on the computer.
And then he was telling him to move left because he was off-center with respect to the hatch. And it is a pretty small opening to get out of with the big suit on and the backpack.
Dave's practically down on his stomach backing out the
hatch.
That's
right, yes. And you have to almost arch your back a little bit, inversely, to fit through there.
Dave says, okay, with that typical inflection of his. You can tell when from some of these inflections of Dave's with a sort of a flippant, okay, or there you are, that things are going well.
The mesa's down, Jim said, so maybe we should be getting a TV picture.
Yes.
There we have it.
Okay, Dave, I'm going to put the jet bag in the hatch, okay?
We can see the ladder of the lunar module and the gold foil surrounding the forward leg, the forward down toward the first foot
pad.
Okay, Dave, we should
see superb television picture down here.
When Dave climbs down that ladder, you'll see some you'll see a foot appear on the left side of the screen. Those of you who may happen to be watching television in some areas of the world and listening to our Voice of America audio.
And I'll pass you the LEC.
That's the conveyor belt bag, the conveyor bag. Something just came flying out under the surface.
It's a jettison bag, I assume.
Mm-hmm. We expect to see much clearer television pictures this time than ever before. There's a whole new camera system. This is the same camera which will be mounted on the lunar rover, which is now stowed in the modular equipment storage assembly, the toolkit assembly on the side of the exterior of the limb, the descent stage. The camera is aimed, it's set up in a fixed position so that once they pull a lanyard and open the stowage assembly, the assembly folds out and the camera is aimed out across the ladder so that it may view the astronaut, the first man, coming down onto the surface. We can see the surface of the moon in the distance there at a slight angle, very white in our color TV at this moment. When you have the light behind you, it really burns out or blocks out all shadow detail, doesn't it, sir?
Right. The angle, of course, is due to the angle, the way the mesa is sitting right now. It's probably not level.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they're on quite that steep a slope. I hope not.
They are on a slight slope, as I understand.
Yes.
Tilted just a bit to the left if you're in the lunar module looking out, and a bit to the rear. Something like 8 or 9 degrees?
Yes, eight degrees in one pitch and I think 11 degrees in roll.
In roll. Let's see. Scott hasn't appeared yet.
Okay, Dave is still working with the this LEC, this portable conveyor belt gadget, and the next item I have is he should be heading down the ladder.
Okay.
There's Scott with an okay.
There, now he's headed down.
Indeed. We should be able to see an astronaut coming down the ladder. Boy. There he comes, two jump at a time, both feet together, down onto the foot pad. There's Dave Scott, ready to step off. And there he is, he's on the surface of the moon, on the half hour.
Dave, an extraordinary television picture here.
Okay, Houston, as I... stand out here in the wonders of the unknown at Hadley, I try to realize there's a fundamental truth to our nature. Man must explore.
Scott's on the surface, getting his bearings.
And this exploration is at its greatest.
It's moving into the sun now. Sunlight shining on his suit. He's just moved out of sight of us here on our TV picture. I see why we're in a tilt.
We've got, that's very interesting. There's so much hummocky ground around here. We're on a slope of probably about 10 degrees. And the left rear foot pad is probably about 2 feet lower than the right rear foot pad. And the left front's a little low, too. But the limb looks like it's in good shape. The rover is in good shape.
He's bouncing
the
around.
Manager, I guess I got his engine bell. It's a little rise right under the center of the limb. The rear leg's on a crater, and the rim of the crater is right underneath the engine bell.
The rear leg of the limb is right on the edge of a crater.
Dave says they kind of dented or crumped the engine
Roger,
bell.
Dave, Jim, got the message. Okay.
The engine bell must have hit the rim of this small crater there.
Yes, okay.
Touched down. They don't need that one again. It's done its job.
Sorry about that, Jim, but IFR landings, you know.
IFR landings. An instrument landing. He couldn't see anything at all from about 20 to 30 meters onto the surface.
Okay.
The dust was blowing up.
ETB. Jim, you can transfer the ETB.
The equipment transfer bay.
The stability is pretty good. Okay.
Dave is bouncing around, getting his balance, trying to orient himself to the way to maneuver about. He's really jumping, just hopping about almost like a rabbit as he's doing all of this. First thing you have to do is to learn how to get your balance in this 1/6 gravity. No matter how much you train on Earth, you still have just a little bit of orientation to accomplish on the surface of the moon. He has the clothesline device for transferring equipment down from up inside the limb, some 4 or 5 meters high. Jim Irwin is inside there, and he's now going to pass down some of this equipment to Dave on this clothesline-like device. Dave is pulling. We can see Dave pulling the cord. And there comes the equipment transfer bag.
Look straight up and see our good earth back there.
He says he can look.
Roger.
Look straight up and see one of his landmarks back there. Equipment transfer bag.
This bag, incidentally, contains two Hasselblad cameras, three extra magazines for those still cameras, three magazines. Three magazines for the sequence camera.
The murder valve is yours, whatever position you'd like. And did something else come out with the ETB?
He's asking if something else came out with the equipment transfer bag.
The wrapping on the package for the LEC.
Oh, yeah.
The wrapping on the package for the conveyor bell.
Yeah, the conveyor bell is initially folded up neatly into a... It's quite a long thing, and to keep it from running around the cabin, they have it in a small package. And Jim must have not removed it from the rope, so it came out when Dave pulled it on down.
That's expendable. It can stay there on the surface.
And they have their maps in that bag and the checklist to run the rover, to power it up and power it down. And their B-Sliss, which is a backup system and in case they lose a water supply or the pump in one of the backpacks.
One of the interesting things, Jim, is the momentum you generate.
Okay, Dave, all of the equipment in this bag will be mounted. The cameras will be mounted on the chest of each astronaut. They'll take all of the checklists with them on the rover. Now, the rovering vehicle is around to Dave Scott's left, just out of sight. It's folded up inside the side of the descent stage. They will deploy that just a little later after both astronauts are outside. There are some more lanyards to be pulled. Scott reported after he went out onto the surface that the rover looked to be in good shape as he checked it out on the side of the lunar module. He described the fact that they had landed on a slight slope, and in landing, the back foot pad went down on the rim of a crater, and the engine bell of the descent stage was crimped just a little at touchdown because it came down on the rim of a small crater. And Dave reminded us that his touchdown was actually on instruments, an IFR landing, as he said, because he really couldn't see the surface from about 20 or 30 meters on down. Dave is now moving around. Let's see what's happening. He's back in our TV picture. He's hopped back up on the ladder. Jim Irwin is still inside.
Come up, take a look.
Dave's going up to take a look at something there.
Stand by.
He says, stand by.
Hey, come left, Jim. Left. Get out of your back up. Shut down.
He went up to give Jim Irwin some instructions for getting through the hatch. Jim is coming out now, and Dave climbed up the ladder so he could see him.
Mm-hmm. Tell him how to get down and move sideways as he crawls backwards on his stomach. Dave's back down on the surface now, bouncing around, still exploring and getting used to that feeling. You train underwater, train in a weightless environment, you train hanging on springs, you do a lot of things, but they don't quite equal the real thing, do they, Fred?
No, but as you can see, fortunately, it doesn't really require much training. Everybody that's gone adapts very easily.
There's Jim Irwin. He's just down the ladder, and he's stepped off onto the surface.
Oh, yeah. Okay, why don't you get your visor, Jim. Let me get your antenna.
Both men are now out on the surface of the moon. We can see one of them in front of us. Incidentally, Dave Scott has some red bands around his arm, around his leg. I think there's a red streak on the back of his helmet so that we may identify the command pilot from the lunar module pilot.
Why don't you save it? Let's document it. Okay. Circle around it. Okay, I'm going to move out and get the contingency sample.
Roger, Jim.
Jim Irwin is now going out to pick up the contingency sample, the first piece of lunar material to be picked up and stowed away as a contingency in case they have to go back in the limb in a hurry. They will have some material to bring home.
Roger, Jim.
He's gone out of sight, out to the west of the landing site, toward the rill, to pick up the contingency sample. He wants to get out a number of meters so that you get away from the area onto which the exhaust from that descent engine might have sprayed and contaminated that sample. And you put this in a small bag and stow it on his side.
If that's time-based five, time, I see, is there, since they started EVA, they're running just a little bit ahead right now,
mm-hmm.
A couple of minutes.
25 minutes ticking away on our clock display here, telling us how long the men have been on the surface. They'll be out there some 7 hours until they're back inside and buttoned up.
Around here, it's about 2 inches sub-grounded in the contingency sample along with the soil.
This is Irwin.
Roger, Jim, we copy that. And did Dave get your UV visor down?
Irwin's picking up Irwin has picked up a rock which is about 2 inches for his contingency sample. Joe Allen asked if he did something with his visor there, didn't he?
Yes, I want to make sure he had the sun visor down.
Mm-hmm.
The Velcro and the Mesa blankets, we have all the tape. It really makes it tough.
Scott is removing the camera from the equipment stowage assembly, and he says in addition to the Velcro, which holds this on here, there's some more tape around it. He says it makes it a bit tough to get off. Well, he hasn't moved the camera yet, but he did rock the Mesa around a good bit as he apparently is removing some of the equipment from it first.
Okay, I have the contingency sample. I'm taking it back to the ladder.
Roger, Jim.
Irwin's coming back in from some distance away with his contingency sample.
Dave is working now to get the TV camera off of the Mesa and mount it on its tripod, so we'll get a little better picture of the total scene here shortly.
He'll back it off.
Oh, why don't we slip, Dave? Boy, that's really soft dirt there around the front footbed. Sure is. About 6 inches deep of soft material.
Irwin commenting on the very soft
like
material around the footpad. He says it's about 6 inches deep. No wonder we slipped a bit, he said, as we landed.
Yeah, powder.
Very powdery.
Hey, don't move back. I got the tripod over here. Okay.
We can see Jim Irwin and this big backpack. That is a monster of an instrument. Unfortunately, in the 1/6 gravity of the moon, it isn't as heavy as it looks.
Looking ahead.
Joe is commenting with the soft soil, it'll be easy to dig the trench.
Mm-hmm. Just hopefully it won't be so soft that the trench caves in on the sides. That's happened on earlier missions. They've had trouble keeping the trench sides from caving off. Dave is now moving the camera off now. You'll mount it on a tripod and give us a better panoramic view of their activities here on the surface. The television picture is jiggling around. Transmission's becoming quite clear here now that the men are outside.
You're here, but I'm standing by, Joe. It's about a meter in diameter. And then there's a smaller crater right in the center of it, and that one has fragments around it that have glass exposed on them.
A crater within a crater?
Where the larger crater does not have any glass exposed. Just a smaller crater within the large one.
Glass means that there has been some melting.
Copy. And careful with the sun, Dave.
Jim Irwin is back several meters away, describing a small crater
you
see.
I turn this thing back and point it at you. At 12 o'clock, it's going to be looking right into the sun, so you better think about that. Matter of fact, I think a little discretion here might put it over about 10:30 or 11.
Roger, Dave. That sounds good.
Dave being very careful not to point the camera into the sun here as he sets it up on the tripod. Gee, look at the hills or the hummocks, as he describes them. It's really rolling terrain.
Pretty bright. Joe, I'm going to swing the camera around towards the ground. Now it's pointing back at the limb, but down. I want you to take a look as I move it up slowly. Make sure that we're okay on what you see, okay?
That's Scott asking for directions from Earth on mounting the camera. Make sure he doesn't point it into the sun. And he's moved it around as he is mounting it on the tripod.
Dave, we read all of that. We are getting a beautiful picture now.
Dave,
we're
going
to try to wind up with the tripod in the shade, if that's possible, looking back towards the limb.
As he's moved
that's possible.
As he's moved this thing around... We've seen quite a bit of the lunar terrain around the landing site, and it is extremely bumpy-looking lurine. That's as expected, isn't it, Fred?
Yes.
Now, he's back off to the west of the limb. He's trying to mount this tripod with a camera on it in the shadow of the limb so that the sun...
He
says it's right in the crater, the tripod.
Mag C is going on the 16 millimeter.
Mag... Charlie?
Jim Irwin is putting one of the magazines in the 16-millimeter movie camera. He's back there beside the lens.
Joe, that ought to do it for your TV, I hope.
Dave, we're happy. It looks good.
There's some noise in both the communication and television picture causing a jiggle.
Do you like it like that, or do you want to go to the settings and checklist?
Stand by, Dave. Stand by.
I think they'll want to sort of zoom back to get a greater panorama than they have at the moment. Some noise in the overall signal. Both that static you hear in the communication is also being reflected in the television picture, causing a slight breaking up in the upper half of the TV picture. Seems to be there. It seems to be smoothing out now. I bet there are a bunch of men in communications at these ground stations working on that right now.
And probably, like usual... The problem is here on Earth.
We're all configured for those pictures. Good. Okay, Houston, I give you about 10 more seconds.
Roger, Dave. Very slightly more to the right so we can watch the rover come down.
Dave's anxious
to
move on.
Looks good.
How's that? Okay, do you want to leave those settings at F8 instead of F11?
Dave's anxious to move on,
it's
so
okay,
he
Dave,
says,
beautiful.
I'll give you about 10 more seconds.
Okay.
Then he wants to move on to the next activity.
Okay.
Now he's moved away from the camera, and it is pointed right toward the side of the limb where the rover is to be
Jim,
deployed.
Okay, let's take a look at our rover friend here. Watch
Scott says, okay.
Really,
watch the TV cable. Don't trip over it, says Scott.
Let me see if I can get it under the pad so I don't trip on it.
Irwin's trying to push the bottom of the cable under the foot pad so he doesn't trip on it.
Okay.
Scott's in front of the rover deployment area. We can see the bottom of the rover. It's a clear white square in our TV picture.
Platform. Okay. Don't pull it yet. No.
There are two lanyards to be pulled. One of the men goes up on the ladder. There's Irwin. He's hopped up on the ladder now.
One walking hinge was loose.
Hinge was loose. He's asking Earth if they read that.
How about this one over here, Dave? Did you check that? Yeah, I might get it. Yeah, because I think it's loose. It's loose, too. Yeah. Both locking hinges were open, Joe.
Both locking hinges were open. But it's still hanging there.
Airlock. Cassie looks generally parallel. And take a look at the pins. Contingency samples on the platform, Joe.
Roger.
Irwin has deposited the contingency sample up in the hatch opening, the little front porch or platform outside the hatch of the lunar module.
How do the pins look up there, Jim? Can you...
Scott's asking how the pins, which hold the rover onto its mounting assembly, how they look up at the top. This broadcast is coming to you from the Voice of America.
Yeah, we learned about those walking hinges.
Transmission describing the activities of Dave Scott and Jim Irwin as they begin their first excursion to the moon.
The LRV tool should come down with that strap.
The LRV, the rover tools, should come down. Jim Irwin is still up on the ladder at the hatch opening, where he will supervise and help with one lanyard up there on lowering the rover down. This rover weighs about 450 pounds to 600, between 400 and 600 pounds on Earth, up there one-sixth of that.
Whenever you're ready, get the right tape up.
I believe that by the time they load all of the equipment on it, it will be the, and also the weight of two astronauts. It'll be the equivalent of some 1,200 Earth pounds.
With the crew... on board, roughly about 950 to 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
It's still up there light enough that
okay,
if you wanted to, you can pick it up and move it around.
It would be light enough for them to pick up.
Mm-hmm. It's released.
Okay.
Now, if you come down, don't disturb a little glass ball. The rover's going to come down into a slight tilt to the left, but I think we'll be okay.
That's Scott describing how the rover will come down and how it will touch down on the surface with a slight tilt to the left. The wheels are both the front and rear wheels are folded around on top of the assembly.
Yeah, taking this out.
These wheels will be sort of popped out as the instrument descends to the surface.
Walking on all these slopes make it sort of sporty, doesn't it?
Dave Scott says working on all these slopes makes it sort of sporty, doesn't it? They quickly got the feel of it, though, and it appears that the best way to move around is to hop around 2 feet at a time. This has fairly well been concluded from all of the astronauts, hasn't it, Fred?
If you're moving just a short distance and close confines like they are right now... If you're going to be going a long ways, though, you do then use a sort of stutter step is a better way to go.
Stutter step?
Yes.
That's a new one to me now.
Well, you have to hesitate because of the time that you're airborne in between steps.
Mm-hmm.
If you walk or run normally, you end up stumbling because you try to put a foot down before it's ready to come down.
Mm-hmm. You're you have to account for the coasting period.
Right, so you have to hesitate between steps.
Uh-huh. Okay, says Scott. He's right in front of
you. I've got to get around it. You put that circle right there. Oh, yeah, too bad. Let me get around there.
They're deploying, they're going out with these lanyards, which are used, these cords, which go back up through pulleys up on the limb, and then are used to lower the rover down. The astronauts absolutely must stand back.
More.
So that the rover doesn't fall on
it. More.
It's beginning to come down. One edge of
You're going to have to do the bulk of the work today.
Stowed assembly.
More.
We can see it bending out now, still on its lock pins at the bottom. The top is coming over.
Okay, we're coming up here, 45.
About 45 degrees.
Came
the wheel.
Okay. Here, let me help you. Take it easy.
One set of wheels just popped out.
Okay, come on
still
up.
At about a 45 degree angle. Is that the front or the rear up there? That's the back.
Hey, just stand there and pull easy. Forget the picture.
I really don't know, Red.
Here we go.
The 16 would not work with the rover deployment yet.
Yeah, that's the, those are the rear wheels,
the
which
rear.
Popped out. We've got a chart here. Each man holding on to a lanyard.
40 there, Jim.
Still about at a 30-40 degree angle. Now the center section is almost horizontal. They're releasing a pulley very slowly. The pulley is holding the weight of the rover back up inside its assembly, and gradually it will come out.
Let's see.
The rear section.
The rocket engines are unlocked again. Is that right?
Scott asking.
They're supposed to be unlocked now, Dave.
That point.
Scott's asking if the locking hinges are supposed to be unlocked at this point. He doesn't want the thing to fall out unless it's supposed to yet.
Things unlocked up there in the stowed position. It doesn't give you too good a feeling.
Dave's a little worried about finding those locking
down okay?
Those locking pins unlocked when it's in its stowed position. Because it doesn't give you too good a feeling. All right, now the rear wheels are about on the surface here.
No.
Kind of bouncing there, isn't it, Fred?
Mm-hmm.
You can.
The mechanism they're lowering it with is a ratchet assembly, which drops it in a series of jerks, which tends to set up this sort of bouncing motion.
Two wheels are on the surface now. And he says the outrigger cables are loose. I believe that was Jim. The forward chassis has not unfolded completely. Yes, it has. The wheels have folded forward and locked.
Yeah, they're very concerned. Apparently, Dave has spotted a very neat pure glass ball that he's allocated to sample, and they are trying to be careful and not step on it. They're going to pick it up here directly.
So apparently this area has had some considerable heat applied. I almost said volcanism, but meteoritic impact could have caused glass.
Yes, in fact, that's the one of the prime considerations for generating these type of splashes and balls is a high energy impact.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming okay.
Coming down. This is the forward part of the rover. It's almost down to the surface. We can see sunlight reflecting off the limb through the wire wheel. Oh, they're almost down with it now. One more of these pulleys with a ratchet, through a ratchet device. And it looks like the rover's almost on the surface. There it is. It's touching down.
It looks like it's loose to me.
Scott says it looks like it's loose to me.
That's good. Okay. Let you go put the
glad to hear that. Scott says, man, this thing is nice and light.
I think he just about lifted it off the ground there trying to put up a seat.
Out.
Jimmer, let's see. No, that's Scott. I see his red armband. Scott is at the forward end. He all lifted it again.
Let's see. I'm going to get you the tool. Maybe you can reach it, Jim.
That's Dave Scott describing his activities as he is now, it looks like he's working on the seat there, I believe, Fred.
Maybe I can reach it.
And next, he has to get rid of the cables that are attached.
I need to get this hinge pin over here, okay?
These cables which were used to lower it to the surface. Jim Irwin's walking back into our picture on the other side of the rover.
Do you see my hinge pin on my side? Yeah, it looks like it's almost all the way in. Yeah, but not quite. How about putting the tip of the tool on it, pushing it?
Talking about hinge pins, this is on the part of the rover which has now been deployed. They've got to make sure all of this locks down.
Let's line this up a little straighter. Let's pull the rear end back towards me.
They're trying to lock the three sections of the rover together now so that they have an integrated solid unit. Remember, of course,
the hinge pins are You're good on my side. Okay.
The whole rover was folded up into three sections. The center section exposed to the surface, and then the forward and rear sections both folded up and are folded in on top of the vehicle. And when deployed, both the forward and rear sections popped out.
As well as the wheels.
Yes, and the wheels, yes. The wheels then, again, were folded about a 45-degree angle toward the center of the assembly.
Yep.
And now Scott and Irwin are making sure that all of these three sections are locked together.
Move it back and turn it around, okay? Jason, turn it, your way? Your way.
See, they're picking up their rover now, see?
Yeah. It only, for the two men, it's about 100 pounds, 120-pound load.
Let me put it down.
About
right
100
there.
Pounds.
Yeah, maybe take it forward a little bit, huh? Well, the pin's out. The rods, the whole saddle up there is still on. Both pins are out. See what I mean? I think we can maybe lift the front end up, can't we? Sure.
Lifting up the front end again. They haven't completely disconnected the rover from its mounting mechanism. They're still trying to get it completely released.
Yeah, right now they're working with the hinge pins on the folding, one of the folding thirds of the rover. One of the pins apparently didn't look like it's all the way in.
Pull the saddle pin, please.
Yeah, the saddle pin has been pulled. Okay, Joe, the situation is that both pins are out of the saddle, and it still seems to be connected to the frame of the LRV.
Astronauts Scott and Irwin working on the lunar module, on the lunar rover, as they're trying to get it solidified. They're on the surface of the moon, beginning the first extravehicular excursion. They've just removed this small lunar automobile, are putting it together, and in just a few moments, they will go mount their equipment on the rover and begin their first excursion. This is Rhett Turner in Houston with Fred Hayes, and we'll report more to you after a short time.
This is the Voice of America's special coverage of the flight of Apollo 15. Apollo 15 is now 120 hours, 24 minutes into the mission. Commander David Scott has been on the lunar surface some 30 minutes now. Lunar pilot James Irwin joining him a few moments ago, turning on cameras, setting up equipment, and collecting samples early in this first major extra-vehicular activity. The Voice of America will return to the air with its worldwide coverage in 15 minutes, at 14 hours, 15 GMT, to pick up the astronauts' activities as they test the four-wheeled lunar rover, which will transport them to the edge of canyon-like Hadley Rill. Our thanks to astronaut Fred Hayes of the National Aeronautics and Space Agency and VOA space correspondent Rhett Turner at the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston. This is Norman Garron at the Apollo News Center. This program has come to you from the United States of America.